You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Today is episode 215 here on the Nate Lull Podcast. I am your host, Nate Lull. My guest on 215 today is Afton senior Elijah Bashuska. He is a standout soccer star, not only for the Afton-Harpersville boys varsity team, which they did win a MAC championship this year in the fall, but he's also a standout with his travel team down in Binghamton. So we'll talk about all of that today. And he's going on to play college soccer next year at Houghton University out in Western New York. So, but besides soccer, I thought it would be interesting to bring Elijah on because he had a pretty serious health scare this past spring. And, you know, from what I can gather, Elijah is a pretty quiet, cool, calm, collected guy, and he's not going to go shouting from the rooftops about this. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of what happened. So I wanted to bring him in and chat about this because it was something that hit home for me as well. It was kind of something that came out of nowhere for Elijah, could happen to anybody, anytime. So to hear him talk about his story, some of the pain that he went through, I thought it was very interesting, and I learned a lot about what he went through. So I hope that you will learn something as well from it today. And he's really just a really great representation of local athletes. Works hard in the classroom, works hard on the field, and whatever he's doing. And I know that at the next level, he's going to be successful as a student and as an athlete. And what really stuck out to me is why he chose Houghton and the way he describes his recruiting and why he decided to go there. I think you'll get a lot out of that as well. I thought it was a really mature and great answer. So Elijah Bashuska today, I hope you'll enjoy this one. All right, before we jump into today's interview, of course, want to thank all our special sponsors here on the Nate Lull Podcast. They make this possible. They include JM Electrical Contracting in Bainbridge, Covered Bridge Farm Market in Unadilla, Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta. We have the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, Sportsfield Specialties, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley, NYCM Insurance, Springbrook, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company, Stewart's Shops, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta, Shenango Memorial Hospital of Norwich, Shindello Federal Credit Union of Franklin, the Amphenol Corporation of Sydney. We have SFCU, Benson Agency Real Estate of Oneonta, Huff Ice Cream of Sydney, Morabito Gresham Insurance, New York Pizzeria of New Berlin, Waste Recovery Enterprises of Sydney, the Rinker Insurance Agency of Afton, McCready Motors in Norwich, Acco Brands of Sydney, Quality Hardwoods in Twin Valley Finished Lumber, Spike's Pizza and Grocery of Edmiston, NBT Insurance Agency, Gavin's Pizzeria of Sydney, DTC Delhi Telephone Company, Morabito Energy Products, and Superior Heating and Air Duct Cleaning of Sydney. Episode 215 today with Afton senior Elijah Bashuska. Again, I hope you'll enjoy this one, and thanks for checking back for another episode on the Nate Lull Podcast. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today is episode 215 here on the Nate Lull Podcast, and we haven't talked soccer in a while here on the podcast, so I thought it'd be a good idea to sit down with one of the guys who really has made a big impact over his time playing for the combined Afton-Harpersville team. So I have Elijah Bashuska here in studio today. Thanks for coming in, man. So first off, I mean, we have a lot to talk about, but we were kind of talking about it off the air, but the last little bit of senior year here. Are you, you know, nervous? Are you excited? Everybody kind of has a different take on the end of their high school career. What do you think?
I'm not really nervous. I'm going to be more sad about it when it's all over. I definitely do have senioritis when it comes to doing my work, but I'm going to miss all my friends. So, yeah.
I was saying to you before, that's how I was too. And I find that most people aren't that way. Mm-hmm. I feel like most athletes that I talked to were like, I can't wait to get out of here. Yeah. I'm ready for the next thing. And it's so funny. I've said this a million times on the show, but I'll bump into people 2 or 3 years later and they're like, I miss it. Mm-hmm. I miss sports. I miss my friends. I miss the, I guess, less responsibilities at times. So I think it's unique that you are kind of aware of all that. I feel like you've really enjoyed your high school experience.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I know a chapter is coming to an end and a lot of people just, they get there and they don't know the chapter came to an end, but I feel it coming. So I'm trying to enjoy every part that I can.
That's wise. That's really wise. And I think you have a great next chapter coming. So there's a lot to be excited about. But, you know, you've kind of gotten thrown a curveball here mm-hmm. this senior year. And we caught up a little bit at your signing day. You're going on to play college soccer at Houghton next year. But you had a collapsed lung, and there's a very fancy medical name for it. And I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about how that kind of came on, because it's a spontaneous thing.
Yeah, so it's called a spontaneous pneumothorax. I was actually playing intramural volleyball when it happened. It's spontaneous for a reason. It just happened. So, like, how would you want me to describe it?
Well, I think what's interesting about it is when people first asked me about your injury, I think everyone kind of assumed like maybe you got hit mm-hmm. or like, you know, an elbow or you took a ball to the stomach. But correct me if I'm wrong, like that's not what happened, right?
Yeah, no. If spontaneous pneumothorax was like directly in the dictionary and there were pictures, I could be the perfect candidate for one of those pictures. Yeah, so tall, skinny is kind of all you need to be to kind of suffer from that, I want to say. But like it's a really low chance you're going to, so...
So I have some things here that I'll read, but it was funny because when I was at your signing day, your dad's like, did this ever happen to you? And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, why? And he's like, it affects like tall, thin young men who like are athletic runners. I'm like, wow, I think I would have been the perfect candidate too. Like when I look at you, I'm like, that's my exact body type in high school. Like, and I'm still pretty tall and thin to this day. Like I still run and exercise and all those things, but I had was never on my radar. And like, had you ever heard of this before it happened?
No, everybody was telling me that I pulled a back muscle because I was experiencing all the, like the back pain, the neck pain.
Right.
They're like, that's really painful. So you probably just pulled a back muscle or something. So, yeah.
Was there like, so you're at practice at school. Was there like a play where you were like, maybe I did pull a muscle, or were you just like, no, this is weird?
No, actually. So I served the ball and probably 30 seconds after I served is when I started to feel a little neck pain. It started really small and then it got really big. It went down from the neck down like my back, my front chest and everything. So, yeah.
So did you just kind of go to the sideline and say, hey, like I need a minute here? And then did it get worse?
So actually I began to hunch over at like, I want to say 2 minutes after the pain started, and a girl came over and asked if I was all right. I said, yeah, because I thought it was one of those pains that just everybody gets.
Yeah.
They sleep wrong or something like that. But then I hunched over like even more, and then she went and got somebody and I was taken into another room.
Wow. So from there, I mean, how quickly did you get like taken to the hospital or have to go see a doctor?
So this is kind of where they came up with the idea that I pulled a back muscle. So we're like, okay, I guess we'll go to the ER. It's not a big deal. But the pain kept getting worse and worse every minute. So I'm like, you got to call an ambulance or something. So eventually my mom kind of came down in a hurry and she took me to the Sydney Hospital, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah. And we got there and the nurse said the moment she saw me, she knew exactly what it was. So
really?
Yeah.
I mean, I did some reading on this because then I got fascinated being like, wow, this could have happened to me. And I had like no idea. And I'm thinking, you know, you're a runner, you're a soccer guy, we're built the same. And like, I found an article that's literally entitled "Tall, Thin Young Man, You Could Suffer from a Collapsed Lung." And this is about, you know, a young guy in Canada who essentially he's 19. You know, he said, I never thought having the tall, lean build would land me in the hospital, but I'm among a group of men with a health condition where a collection of air in the chest can cause the lung to collapse. And he said when he would breathe all the way in, it was really hurting when he got to the top of his breath. Is that something you experienced?
So actually, my lung was 100% collapsed. It was at 0% or whatever. I don't remember how they explained it. But so I really couldn't breathe at all. It was like small, shallow breaths. And when I would breathe, I would look down at my chest and only the right side would inflate. So
wow.
Yeah.
So did you have like extreme shortness of breath in that time?
Yeah, very.
I can't even imagine. So I didn't know like why the tall, thin young man thing. And this article was saying the main theory is that the lung is weakened in individuals who grow in a significant way in terms of like a growth mm-hmm. spurt. And that can cause a weakening of the lung, which leads to what's called like a cyst mm-hmm. in there essentially. And then if you think of the cyst as like bubble wrap,
yeah.
if one of those bubbles ruptures, air can escape from the lung and cause the lung to collapse.
Uh-huh. So what they called it in the hospital was a bleb.
Yeah.
And it basically looks like a pimple, really, right. on the lung. And when I would breathe in, it would let out these tiny bubbles that would collectively cause a problem in the lung cavity.
So you were kind of just like a ticking time bomb in a way. Like, it's not anything you did.
Nope.
You know, it's not like you had some weird health condition. You're not out there smoking or something, you know,
yeah.
like it just had probably was like a growth spurt thing. And
it was, they said I had really long lungs. So whatever that meant.
Yeah. Right.
yeah.
So, all right, take us through. So you're in Sydney, they diagnose it. I mean, eventually you find your way up to Albany Med. Take us through how you got there.
Right. So I'm in Sydney and they offer to put in a tube. Well, they say you need a chest tube, right? And, they only had big chest tubes there, and they thought that would be really uncomfortable.
Mm.
So they called Cooperstown, and Cooperstown said they would take me. They had better supplies there. So we went there via ambulance, and every bump was, like, really painful. But we ended up getting there, and I went into an ER. Or I'm not sure if it was an OR because it was more open, so I'm just going to say ER.
Right.
But the nurses came in. It's a teaching hospital, so they had interns around me and stuff. And then they decided they were going to put the chest tube in, the first chest tube in. So I'm like, all right, put me to sleep, and then we'll just be on our way. Well, they didn't put me to sleep.
Oh, no.
they got the lidocaine. So I'm looking at them. They walk over, and it's this huge needle, right? I'm like, okay, it's a numbing medicine, so it's not going to hurt. But they didn't push the medicine in until it was at or under the ribs, and that was just really painful. So then they took the scalpel. I'm on my side. They cut into my side, and then I see them bring over the tube. It didn't really hurt until they got to the ribs, and then they said, you're going to feel some pressure. We all know that means you're going to feel a lot of pain.
Oh, yeah, right.
yeah, and so I hear a crack and then a thud, and then it goes in, they turn on the suction, and then the air starts coming out, and I can slowly start to breathe again.
So they had told you, like, we're going to knock you out for this, and then kind of didn't?
No, I was just expecting it because I'm like, oh, it's a surgical procedure. I'm going to get knocked out. I'll be fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So all of a sudden, you're kind of like, well, I guess we're going to be awake for this.
Yep.
So the chest tube is essentially to help you start breathing again on that side.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say it's probably 2 centimeters in diameter. They have it hooked up to the suction thing, which bubbles all the time. They explained why, but I don't remember on the spot. But yeah.
It's funny you say that because and we've talked about it here on the podcast before, but I did a bone marrow donation
mm-hmm.
and it was the medical stuff just went right over my head at a certain point. And people
yeah.
are always like, well, what about this or what about that? And I'm like, I was there. I don't know. Right. Like you would, mm-hmm. you would think in the moment, and like you're a biology type of guy, like,
yeah.
you know, but sometimes it's just happening so fast and you're in pain, like you don't get all the particulars, right? And you're just
mm-hmm.
putting that trust in the doctor's hands. So you're in Coop and you get the chest tube. What happens from there?
So we're supposed to wait 2 to 3 days to see if my lung fully inflates. So we get to the third day. They're like, all right, we're going to stop the suction and see if your lung stays up. It didn't. So then surgery was the next option. What they did was called this time I actually did get to go to bed, so that was
yeah.
that was nice. They did something called a mechanical pleuritesis. So they went in and they scraped all the interior of my ribs out, which was, I'll tell you about the pain later.
Yeah.
and they added 2 new tubes. So they took out the original tube and added 2 new tubes, one in my side and then one in my back. So I'm put out for that. When I wake up, it's probably the most painful experience I've ever gone through. Like,
wow.
It's on a scale from 10, it was 11 or 12. It was really bad. I was on all the good medication too, fentanyl, you name it, I had it. But it was not fun.
So you're on the pain meds, and it's still an 11 or a 12.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's scary. Were you like, what is going on here?
Yeah. So the pain lasted about, like, the severe pain, it lasted a day, and then it slowly started to go off. But so when I was on oxycodone, the pain was still there. It was just a little bit better. I had to wait until they went around every 2 hours with the fentanyl. I had to fall asleep or else I would be in pain really bad. So I had to take advantage of, like, the drowsiness of fentanyl and fall asleep so I wouldn't feel that pain.
And I just got to say, like, somebody might be sitting at home like, oh, it couldn't have been that bad. It's like, I've seen you in action in soccer, and I think more about your track experience, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're someone who knows how to suffer. Like,
right.
you don't become the MAC League 1600 meter champion without knowing how to, you know, go through a little bit of pain, especially like cardio wise. So to me, I'm like, this is someone who knows pain. And like, when you're saying it's an 11 or a 12, like, yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It was bad.
Your poor parents, like, what are they, how were they this whole time?
So in Cooperstown, well, they didn't really know what was going on. We had no clue what a collapsed lung was about, but, in Cooperstown, we had two, like, chairs that folded into bed, so they stayed with me the whole time, going home once in a while just to shower and get something to eat.
It's amazing because, like, 1 minute you're at volleyball practice and your senior year is going great, and the next thing you know, you're in the hospital for a long period of time. But so how do you get from Cooperstown to Albany?
So what we did, I'd say it was about 5 days now. They're like, all right, we're going to see if the two tubes in the surgery works. So they take me off suction. They wait a day. And then the next day, my lung deflates down, back down to like 50% or whatever that number was. So they're like, all right, so maybe the air pocket is at the top of your lung. So what they did was I had to go down and get a CT. This is like day six or seven now. I had to go down and get a CT scan. And while they did the CT scan, they inserted another small tube called a pigtail tube through my, like, the front of my chest.
Right.
And I was awake for that too. So it was another really painful experience. Would I say, I don't know if it's as painful as the first tube that went in, but it was definitely really painful because it looks like one of those metal wires, I don't know, that fences use.
Oh, and yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just saw them putting it down into my chest and it was very uncomfortable. And again, I was on all the pain meds there could be, and it was still really bad.
On a side note here, like, you're salutatorian in your class,
yeah.
So obviously school is very important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, is it somewhere in the back of your head, like, are you freaking out, like, I've missed a week of school now?
So they called salutatorian, and then this happened after. So I'm like, okay, so I'm already into college, I'm accepted, I'm already going to play soccer, I'm salutatorian. Is there really a reason where I would need to zoom into class? No. So
right.
I kind of just sat there. I'm like, well, I'll just let the work pile up and I'll get to it. I'll get to it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So have you found that you're still having to catch up school-wise now? Or did
yes.
you just kind of put in some yeah. massive work?
For those of you that don't know, I got here a little late because I had to finish a Calc 2 test. So I'm definitely still making up that schoolwork.
I texted your dad. I was like, how dare he? You know, stay late at school to do schoolwork,
right.
You know. So we had a good laugh about that. But I mean, I think that's great. Like you said, you probably could have just, you know, your next chapter's set. But I admire that you're catching up on everything and doing the right thing. And it's got to be hard. That had to be a mountain of work.
Yeah.
So, all right, you get the pigtail in and take us from there.
So let's say it's day seven now. We get the pigtail and we wait a couple days, we wait 2 days, and my lung is still not healing. So we have, who did this was a general surgeon. He's a great surgeon, but he's not specialized in the lung area. So he had the idea of sending me to a specialist in Albany, but we wanted to wait. They didn't have that idea right away, so we waited a bit, probably 3 more days. And keep in mind, this wait, it's like, it's terrible. Like, you're just sitting in a bed all day. I mean, I did have friends and my girlfriend stop by almost 3 or 4 times a week, and that was really helpful for that. But So 3 days after they put in the pigtail, it's not healing. They're like, all right, we're going to send you to Albany. So again, we have to get in an ambulance for over an hour. This time it's not as painful because the suction and stuff, it got my lung back up there. So my lung wasn't like, I couldn't feel it bouncing around in every bump.
That's good.
Yeah. So we get to Albany. We go through the ER, and the ER, it's packed. It's like a COVID packed, how it was during COVID. And it was a little scary at first, but eventually I go up to my room. I had a roommate. So in Cooperstown, I didn't have a roommate. I had a room all to myself. So at first I was like, great, now I'm going to have to deal with a roommate.
Yeah, right.
But we actually became quite good friends with our roommate and their family. So we're at Albany. We meet with our surgeon the next day. What is his name? I'll remember his name, but he was really inspiring, so I don't know why I don't remember his name right now. Dr. Hosanna, that was his name.
Okay.
But we meet with him, and the inspiring part about him was, so we have these general surgeons that did every trick in the book to try and get it fixed, and it didn't get fixed. He sees my case, and he's like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll get you fixed. And then I'm like, imagine being able to say that. Imagine being able to say you can cut into somebody, move their lung around, fix it, and then be done.
Yeah.
And I actually want to be a cardiothoracic surgeon now because of that. He was just truly inspiring. Yeah.
Wow.
So we wait about 3 days, and he's like, all right, we're going to prep you for surgery. So we go in for surgery. He's listening to some rock music in the OR. And so they put the anesthesia on my face, and I'm still talking to them. So they keep the anesthesia pumping, and I'm still talking to them. They're like, okay, why is he still answering our questions? It turns out redheads actually have been proven to need 20% more anesthesia than the average person.
No way.
So yeah. And when I woke up from surgery, I didn't actually wake up yet. I started ripping things out because apparently I don't do well with anesthesia. They had three surgeons holding me down, and I got the nickname Hulk in the hospital because of that. They're like, he looks like he shouldn't be able to pull things out with three people holding him down, but he did.
Yeah.
So I was known as Hulk in Albany. And they did something called a chemical pleuridesis. So I explained what mechanical pleuridesis was. It's basically just the same thing, but with chemicals. And that was actually more painful than the mechanical. And it was bad. I couldn't even go to the bathroom by myself. I had to stand up and pee in a cup while my parents were holding me. So that was very traumatizing.
Yeah, man. Like, oh, but got to do what you
got
to do.
I got through it. They threatened me with a ureter or catheter. Yeah. And I did not want that. So
no.
I got up.
Good call. Mm-hmm. Good call. Wow. So it's pretty amazing that I thought about this recently. Like, all right, my job is to go to sports games and, meet student athletes and get stats and standings. And then you think about your doctor comes mm-hmm. in your room, is able to do this intense surgery, knew your specific situation immediately, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what a difference. I mean, yeah. To me, I'm just like, wow, that person is put on this earth to do that. Like, that's so incredible. And it makes me just think, like, I don't even know how someone's brain works like mm-hmm. that. So it was so inspiring to you that you think you might want to go into this now.
Yeah, absolutely. I already changed my major on my college website, and this is something that I really want to do. Originally, I wanted to be a chiropractor. I'm like, okay, I like cracking my brother's back or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But and then I met Dr. Hosanna, and I'm like, okay, I really liked cracking people's backs, but I really want to do this. So I just switched from being a chiropractor. The moment I talked to him, I just had a feeling that I really wanted to follow in his footsteps.
I know that you know, religion is a big part of your life, and you have to think, like, everything kind of happens for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. And like, this might have been a really tough experience, but who knows where it's going to lead you in the future, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I want to say that it was meant to be for me to meet Dr. Hosanna.
I mean, obviously, we don't want anything bad to happen mm-hmm. to our friends and our family, but for you to get through this and have the strength, do you feel like you're a stronger person now coming out on the backside?
Physically,
of this?
Not yet. Mentally, absolutely. Absolutely.
I would think that when you go through an experience like that, anything in your daily life probably just seems trivial, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
And then I think that's where my senioritis kicked in. I'm like, I just dealt with this, and now you're expecting me to do Spanish homework at, what, 3 a.m. in the morning? I don't...
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Speaking of school, on a quick side note, I saw that your salutatorian by, like, less than half a point.
It was, like, point two something.
And the valedictorian is your girlfriend.
Yes, so it was a lose-lose situation no matter what I did there.
You took one for the team, right?
I did,
like,
yep.
Hey, you know, I want you to have that.
No, she definitely deserved it, but I don't let her know that. I tell her that I let her do it.
Was that a battle, you know, all through school? I often talk to boys and girls who are valedictorian, salutatorian, and they're watching every point along the way. Like, was it mm-hmm. like that for you?
Yes. So I was first all the way up until 11th grade. And then, so we're not supposed to, but all the kids in my accelerated classes, we talk about our GPA and our ranks. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm second now.
Oh no.
And then this girl walks in and she's like, guys, look, I'm first. And well, I've always known Jesse. We've been good friends, but I'm like, all right, so now I have to work harder. And I did, but she worked harder too, and she beat me.
Yeah, who is your girlfriend? We better give her a shout out here.
Jesse Voltz.
Jesse Voltz, okay. Mm-hmm. Were you dating, have you been dating for a long time, or was this kind of like new within the battle here of the one and two ranking?
So, I'm so sorry, Jesse, but she liked me since sixth grade.
Whoa.
And I've been rejecting her like every year. And then this year we started dating. She played the long game. She won.
She won.
She won. So, yeah.
We don't often get into relationships here on the podcast, mm-hmm. but when I saw that, you know, you guys were 1-2 and it was so close, mm-hmm. I thought, wow, that's kind of a unique thing. And mm-hmm. in a way, it's cool that you guys will be able to share that together
yeah.
at graduation. So mm-hmm. now you can see who has the better speech, right?
Like, right.
That's,
right.
That's going to be big. So
I might go more sentimental so I can have like the people's hearts edge on that,
yeah.
but like,
I'd say you got some good material with mm-hmm. what you've been through the last couple of months here. So,
yep.
So you have your surgery, you get the nickname the Hulk, and how much longer were you in Albany?
So they started pulling out the tubes right until I had one tube left. So I had three tubes in, a total of five tubes, but I had three tubes in at this time. They started pulling it out every day, and I was out of there in 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
But I had to go home with the tube still in, so.
Because when I came to your signing day, I think you still had one tube left?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I show up to your signing day. It was probably one of the best ones I've been to. It mm-hmm. was a really nice night in the auditorium at Afton Central School. Mm-hmm. And you could just tell, I didn't really know what to expect in terms of, you know, your dad had said you had just gotten home.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you were really... I would say walking around very gingerly. So how painful was it that night?
It was really bad. Like, I was in a lot of pain towards the end of the signing ceremony. I was still on oxycodone at the time. So I was kind of drowsy too. I'm like, all right, let me get to the signing. Let me sign that paper, talk with some people, get home, go to bed. The problem with going to bed is that I had to stay in one position the whole night. I had to be on my back. I couldn't move side to side because it would be too painful. If I moved a certain way, like the liquid would go back in my lung. That's not bad. It's just I felt really uncomfortable when it did that, so I didn't like that.
Yeah. So that's the chemical part of it? Is that that liquid or?
So it's actually, so your lung gives off its own liquids.
Oh,
so,
gotcha.
Yeah, it was just draining those liquids so with the air. So, yeah.
Wow. So, like, did you have kind of that goal, like, hey, my signing day is this day, and I want to be there for it? Like, mm-hmm. was that your goal to kind of get
yes.
out of the hospital by then?
Yep. I wanted to be home by my signing day, for sure.
And like you said, you probably wanted to just go sign the paper and, you know, take a few photos and go home. But, I mm-hmm. mean, the place was packed. That's
it
the
was,
most
yeah.
people I've ever seen at a signing.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like to kind of have to talk to everybody? I mean, it was great, but you just had to be hurting, too.
So originally I came in with the idea that sign paper, go home. But then I saw the turnout. I'm like, all right, that's obviously not going to happen. But then, I don't know, just the support of everybody made me feel like really happy. And I really wanted to be there, even though I was tired, even though I was in pain.
I gotta say, you didn't show it. Like, I mean, I knew you were.
I did walk a little weird, if you noticed that, but I was a little hunched over. But
I didn't get this sense like I gotta get out of here. I knew you were hurting, but like you took a million photos, and you know it was long. You had to be there a couple hours in terms of just set up, get there, the signing, and then just everyone wanted to sit around and talk.
Yeah.
But how special was that for you to have everybody kind of in your life in one room at one time?
It was really special. It was a really special moment for me.
What I liked was, you know, your high school coach, Coach B, gets up there. Your travel coach came. How much did them taking the time to get up there and say all those nice things about you? Like, what did that mean to you?
So when you play on a team, you're like, okay, you do your part. You make an impact. You might not. But when you see your coaches go there and support you, you're like, wow, maybe I really did make an impact on this team and their lives. And that's really inspiring.
Yeah, I think, I mean, not only were your high school teammates there, but your travel teammates and just a lot of community members. I think what you guys accomplished as a team, which we'll talk about, really maybe didn't notice it in the moment, but I really think the communities of Afton and Harpersville bought into it. Like, everyone was super excited. So I've always been curious, you know, talking to your high school coach, he's always been really good to me, sending me info. And he was always excited about this group he had coming, this group I got coming. And for you guys as players, did you know as younger student athletes, like, hey, we got something special coming here?
Yep. We knew that since we went undefeated in AYSO sports. So,
I mean, right away, you guys had to be thinking, like, what was the end goal? Was it win the MAC? Was it win the section? Did you guys kind of have that big goal that you wanted?
So, our big goal was to win the MAC because, well, first of all, Athens never really won anything in soccer. But we decided to win the MAC, and we did do that. There wasn't a MAC championship game. So, I mean, we were kind of looking forward to that. But we just had the best record, and it went off of that. Sectionals.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but like, how much did that bum you guys out? Because let me just explain this for anyone listening. They have a MAC championship at the end of every year, and you know the two best teams get to go play in it. There was a weird thing this year where one of the teams left the league due to a merger. And in the league bylaws, they say if we're below, I believe it was eight teams, we don't have a playoff, and we will just, whoever's in first place at the end is the champ. Next year, they're going to go right back to having enough or amending the bylaws to say we're going to have a championship. But here's this team that I feel like has been waiting your whole lives to get there, and you don't get that game. Like, how tough was that?
So I know for a lot of people, it was a little tough on them. But the goal was to win the MAC, and we did do that. So that was a huge accomplishment. It was really down to Bainbridge and us. Green was in there too. But I have a friend on Bainbridge, and I knew that since there wasn't MAC championship and we won based off record, he'd be like, oh, well, you didn't really win.
Yeah. It's kind of,
but he did say that. But it's all good because we're good. So
you guys have the plaque, and that's the proof, right? I missed it. It was weird not having it this year, especially because the last few years, you know, traditionally, I would say over the last 10 or so years, Green has been pretty dominant. BG has pulled a couple of upsets in there, but really, like, it had to be kind of those two teams, and then here comes this Afton-Harpersville team, and you guys really, were you motivated by the Green-BG factor? Like, hey, we got to knock these guys off.
So BG, that's always been like an Afton rivalry kind of thing. Green, it's kind of like they're the big bad guy because they've always been so good. We're like, all right, we want to get up there. We want to beat them. We want to do something, especially since it was my senior year and my cousin Hunter's senior year.
So you started talking about sectionals. I was at your sectional game with Green. It was a really fun game to watch. What was the team's attitude on sectionals? Because for anyone who doesn't know, Section 4 Class C might be one of the hardest classes to get out of and get to the state tournament. It's just loaded when you talk about the MAC teams and then especially the teams from the IAC from the Ithaca area. So, you know, what was kind of your thoughts going into sectionals?
So we had like this positive mentality that we had a good opportunity to win. when Green scored the first goal, I think it was Liam Flanagan. It was a volley or a shot from just outside the box. It was a phenomenal shot. We were kind of like, oh, okay, we better pick up our game. We better do something here. So that's when we started to score more goals. And actually, one of my favorite soccer experiences came from that game. I had to take a free kick, and it was, I want to say, 20 yards outside the box. And I see a bunch of my players in the box. Then I see Ryan Dawson standing there. So I look over to Joe Bunzi, and him and the green coach are standing next to each other. And I go, Bunzi, where do you want the ball? And he goes, he's looking. He's like, all right, give it to Ryan's head. So so I kick it, go straight to Ryan's head, and he heads the ball right into the goal. So that was like one of the best memories I've had.
I do remember thinking, so I was standing right behind that goal mm-hmm. at that moment and thinking, like, it's probably one of the best set pieces I'd seen mm-hmm. all year, if not within the last 5 years. Because I was just like, I remember thinking, like, did they just, like, was that practice? Did they just draw mm-hmm. that up? You know, because in soccer, oftentimes it's just kick it in there and hopefully your guys are in the right spot. Maybe someone's coming from this side, you know, whatever it might be. But that really looked like a great set piece. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was a big change in that game, momentum-wise.
It was, yeah, for sure.
So that's one of your favorite memories.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wow, it actually went to Ryan's head. And it went in, so.
That was a great game. To have beautiful weather that day down in Harpersville, and it had been, I think, 10-plus years. I want to say maybe 14 or 15 years, right, since you guys had been in sectionals. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
It wasn't our first time in sectionals, but it was our second time.
Right.
So, the year before that was our first time ever in sectionals.
Really?
Yeah.
I was thinking coach had told me at some point, like, they had either never qualified or it had been since, like, he was playing mm-hmm. that they had made any type of playoff round.
Yeah.
So, I think you guys have put the program back on the map. Do you feel like it's going to continue to grow now?
So we're experiencing like a lack of athleticism in the younger grades. So we have my brother's class moving up, and then there's people who haven't been doing sports all year round, soccer all year round. So I think that isn't going to be great for us, but I think that getting so far, that has got us on people's radars, kids' radars, parents' radars, who want their kids to be successful. And I think that there will be a turnout, whether it's 3 years from now or 12 years from now, there is going to be another group that comes up.
You know, I'll ask you this, and there's really no answer, but people always ask me, you know, Nate, what's up with our small schools? We're losing enrollment. You know, why aren't kids coming out to play? What's up with all the mergers? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have the answers. But, like, you're in school right now, so you kind of have the beat on what your classmates and younger athletes are thinking. Like, do you point to anything in general of, like, why aren't athletes wanting to play year-round? Why are they not mm-hmm. coming out? Like, what is it about that in our small schools today?
I actually think it's not just small schools. It's all the schools, at least around me. And I think it has to do with technology, social media, video games. There's no real incentive if you're wanting to play video games over wanting, like, just seeing your parents or want you to do sports. There's video games can be more fun for some people, and I think that's where it's headed.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's easy to point the finger at that, I guess, as a quote unquote adult. But I always try to ask athletes, like, mm-hmm. you're in the heat of it right now. Like, you've made the choice to play sports year round. You know, why maybe one of your classmates who's very gifted chooses to go home and do something else? Mm-hmm. I can't blame that person, but it is sad, right? In a way, like, you're like, man, we could really use your help on the mm-hmm. team and you're not here. It's not a bad choice to go home and play video games, mm-hmm. especially if that's what you like to do, but it is tough when we're scraping for numbers. Mm-hmm. But that's what makes your group so special, right? Like, all those guys have really bought in.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
What's it like getting a chance to play, you know, with your brother? Having that opportunity had to be pretty special.
Mm-hmm. So I played with my brother and my cousin Hunter.
Right.
But it wasn't just those two that I consider, like, the team my family, family on the team. It's the whole team. The whole team is my family. We're all really close with each other. We make jokes about each other all the time. So it just really creates like this welcoming environment.
I got to ask about one of your teammates because he fascinates me. Mm-hmm. The way his style of playing. If I say his last name wrong, please correct me. But Bobby Merciliet. Mm-hmm. He is like this pesky. Like he seems
so annoying to play against.
I was just going to say, like, you got to love to have that guy on your team. But if you're on the other team, you got to be like, man, I hate that guy. Like, he's pesky.
Right.
He's always kind of getting into your under your skin mm-hmm. a little bit. What's it like playing with him?
So it's like you have a target. And being a midfielder, your target is to get the ball up to the striker. And when you have a striker that you know can score when you give them the opportunity, it creates confidence in your team. So I think he helps create confidence because we know he can score if we get him the ball close to the goal.
I think I noticed it even more when he was playing basketball this year because he had a very similar style.
Yes.
Physical almost in a way, and he's a smaller guy, but he's, you know, he's just not afraid to get after it. And I was like, oh, it's like he's playing soccer, but he's on the basketball court right mm-hmm. now. And, man, like, what's it like going up against him in practice? Is it just annoying, or are you like, man, this guy never leaves me alone?
So it can be annoying, yes, but I know it's his play style, and I also pass more than I do other things. So I never really get up against him a lot because I'm always trying to pass and get around him instead of go right up to him.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of people I have on the podcast, it's like, oh, there's all these flashy stats. But with you, I feel like your contribution is your fitness, your style of play, your passing, you're super unselfish, you find teammates, and like it's just a style of game that doesn't get the love it deserves. Mm-hmm. So like how do you feel like you developed your style of game?
So for BC United, the travel team I play for, a lot of that is working on building up from the back, passing out, and I play defense, a center back for that team. So I've kind of had this idea ingrained that I have to pass the ball, I have to build out of the back. Sometimes I kick it up because that's what we're taught to do. If you're in a dangerous situation or if Bobby or somebody else is open, I kick it up. But passing is like a huge part of the BC United team and the whole program as a whole. If you look around New York, you don't really see other teams that pass like we do if you come and watch a BC United team. So it's all about passing, and it creates a culture in which your team can trust you because they know you'll switch the ball on and off.
I mean, your travel team has had a ton of success mm-hmm. and obviously has helped you get on the radar of a lot of colleges. How mm-hmm. important was the travel piece? And I bring that up because one of the main things we always talk about on the show is it worth it to do travel stuff? And what was your experience like, and how did it help you?
So if you're asking if it's worth it, you have to like it. If you don't like it, it's not worth it.
Mm.
But so even if you're like, oh, I want a scholarship, but I don't like soccer, why are you playing soccer, right?
Right.
It's kind of like that. It's 100% worth it, though, if you like soccer and you want to get a scholarship for soccer. We do these things called college showcases. We go down to Maryland, Virginia, wherever. You email the colleges ahead of time that you want to go to. Half of them, or less than half of them, will email you back. And those are the ones that will come watch you. And that's really where you get all your exposure for college. I think I had like 9 offers based off of that exposure, none from high school at all.
How proactive did you have to be? And this is something we always bring up, but especially if I have college coaches on, they're mm-hmm. like, if you reach out to us, that really gets the ball rolling. And we've right. said a million times, living in our area, no college coach is going to come knock on your front door and
right.
say, hey, we want you to come play for us. Mm-hmm. Extremely rare. So was it the time you spent filling out the questionnaires and sending the emails that really helped?
Yes, 100%. You have to be very proactive. You have to respond to their messages. You don't want to wait a day and then respond. You want to respond almost immediately. I have a lot of their text messages or texts. I'm actually still really good friends with one of the coaches from Hood College.
Mm.
But like, since you respond so much, you kind of stand out from the other people that are like, hey, can you come watch me? And then they don't respond back after that. So you really have to be proactive.
We've also brought this up recently on some other episodes of within the recruiting process, you can get friendly with several coaches over a period of months, if not years. What was it like having to tell the other schools, like, hey, I'm going to go to Houghton. Thanks for all your time and energy, but this is the fit for me. Like, how hard was that to do?
So a lot of the time, what kids will do when they choose a college is they call the college that they want to go to, and they say, I chose you, and then everything goes down from there. But what they do is text the other coaches, say that, hey, I chose another college. But I don't think that's the right way to approach it. If you want to stand out from the rest, I think you should call each college coach and tell them, sure, or like, yeah, you're going to go there, or no, you're not going to go there. And I called those eight colleges that I'm not going to, and every single one of them said I stood out just for calling them and telling them that I'm not going there. And they appreciated me for doing that.
I can't tell you how rare that is. I've had a couple of other guests that said they took the time to do that. Maybe it's just the caliber of guest I'm having on, but like, I can't tell you, I'm really good friends with a couple of college basketball coaches, and I can't tell you how many texts I get of a screenshot where they say, well, I guess that's it. And it's their commitment picture to another school. And, you know, they understand, but I think it's just got to hurt, right? Like they've invested this time, and then they don't even get the text, you know, the email, whatever, that says, hey, thanks, but I'm going to go here. And I think that's frustrating to them. So it must really make you stand out, and I applaud you for doing that, because that had to be hard, right?
Yeah, it was. It was really hard, especially for the Hood College coach, because I was really good friends with him.
Were you
and still am?
Were you met with? I'm assuming that the response was all like, "Hey, no, we understand. Thank you. Good luck." Was it? Was there any negativity?
No. Probably the only negativity was, "All right, I'm a little disappointed in that decision, but I understand, and I really applaud you for calling and making the time to talk to me."
So what was it about Houghton? And for anyone who doesn't know, Houghton's, you know, in Western New York, I would say a little west of Alfred. It's kind of in that Alfred, Olean, Geneseo corridor out that way. I've been there. It's a beautiful town, a beautiful campus, small town.
Very small.
Very
yes.
small.
Like Afton.
Yeah, it's literally like one of our towns in the MAC with a college. What was it about Houghton that made you say this is the spot?
So there are three things. The campus is beautiful. The other thing is that it's Christian. It's a Christian college, and my Christian faith is large in my life. But the one of the biggest things actually was that the coach. So every coach that I talked to, of the eight of the nine, said, we want you to come in. We want you to be vocal. We want you. We think you're a guy who will ultimately change the program. But if you watch me play, I'm not actually like super, super vocal. I'll be telling people like, hey, you need to be there or open up. But it's not, I'm not the kind of person who's going to go in and just try and change the program. I'm going to play how I want to play or how the college wants me to play. And I'm going to do my part. And the Houghton coach, Coach McCall, he goes, Elijah, when I look at you, I'm sure a lot of colleges have said that they want you to go in and change the program, but I don't think you're that kind of kid. I think you can be quiet, and I think you will play where you're needed to play, and you will do just that, and I think you'll do great by doing just that.
Interesting.
And I'm like, and that really set him apart. I'm like, that got me thinking. I was up all night thinking about what he said. I'm like, it's true. It's true. So that kind of made me choose to go to Houghton.
I would think, too, like, very flattering that those other schools said that, but wow, what a lot of pressure. Whereas, you know, the Houghton coach kind of almost saying, like, we like you for you, and however it works out, we know you're going to be a great part of the program. So maybe a little less pressure.
It was definitely a little less pressure. And it was down to Hood and Houghton. Hood, I was in the runnings for a full tuition, but it went to two people out of 100 people. And whereas I just went to Houghton, I did a very hard interviews, and I am actually going to I'm in the honors program there in Hood, but I'm also going to London for a semester to study abroad in the honors program at Houghton. So that also helped.
I was reading, so it'll be like the spring of freshman year that you'll go?
Yes. So I am going to miss the spring season, but the coach is fine with that.
But I mean, what a great opportunity to to go and live in London for a couple months, and that's going to be an experience you'll always look back on and cherish, I would think. So, mm-hmm. No, that's, I think it's a great choice. I was interested reading up on your coach. It's, you know, he's from Scotland, I believe, mm-hmm. and had a pretty great background of in his playing days, playing for like the U19 national team and working his way over here and getting, you know, from a player to a coach. Like, was there something about his style too of play that you really, you know, thought was really good?
I'd say it was just the personality, the way he saw people different than other coaches saw people. His accent played a little role in that. Yeah. I love his accent.
That's great.
So, yeah, the moment my mom heard his accent, she's like, Elijah, you got to go here because of that accent.
Yeah. So is it, it's still like full on thick.
It's not terribly thick, but it's there. Yeah. So, yeah.
His soccer journey sounds like it's pretty amazing. And I would also think it looks like he is a man of faith that's done some, mm-hmm. you know, mission trips and yep. really try, it appears that he tries to help in any way that he can. And that had to be pretty attractive as well, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were just talking too that, switching gears a little bit back to track, you know, it's your senior year. You just get cleared now. Like, right. Do you have any goals for this track season to try to, you know, salvage what you can cardio-wise for it?
So I'm actually not doing track because it turns out it'll be too late for me to get to full speed to actually do well in competitions.
I was going to say, like, track is such a short season, mm-hmm. you know, like MAC Championship's going to be in 2 or 3 weeks, right? Like, right. There's just no way. And I would think it probably isn't worth it either, right? To try to, so you get hurt doing that. At this point, it's probably just get your cardio back for summer yep. soccer and go from there.
Yeah, I'm going to have a summer workout schedule from Houghton anyway.
Are you nervous at this point about like, hey, what's it going to feel like when I get to be full speed, full contact again with the lung issue?
Dr. Hosanna was very confident, and he said that I healed 100%, so I'm going to believe him. So I'm not nervous about the healing process.
You know, so Madison Bishuska would be your cousin?
Yes.
So, you know, Maddie obviously was a great field hockey player for mm-hmm. Afton. They make the state Final Four. I had a really good time following her team, and she gets a scholarship and goes to Wake Forest yep. and then really runs into some concussion issues. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to twist her arm to come in here and chat with me about mm-hmm. it because I feel like she has a really good attitude about, like, my dream got taken away, but, you know, I'm still finishing school and moving on with life. And I didn't know if you had talked to her at all about her experience mm-hmm. and what she went through and how she stayed so positive when you have been through some tough times.
Yeah, she's truly, like, an amazing person. And when you talk to her now, you're going to see that she's really happy. She's teaching kids. She's hanging with kids to try and get the teaching process started. And I think I don't want to say this, but I think she's happier than she was.
Really?
She looks like she knows what she wants to do 100%. And the concussion, it did have a negative impact on academics, but she's really happy. And I love to see that.
I'd like to get her in here because, I mean, talk about both of you guys, kind of freak things that you can't really control, mm-hmm. kind of messing with your athletic career. And I think it would be great for athletes to hear her story about, like, here's this D1, you know, everyone says D1, this D1 dream, this great school, and it just kind of gets taken away for just a freak reason, right? Mm-hmm. So I would think her advice would be great. She seemed so happy at your signing day
mm-hmm.
when I got a chance to catch up with her and her family. And so that's great to hear that she's in such a good yeah. spot. And that's great that you guys have that, you know, the family connection. But also I figured like you had to lean on her at some point to be like, hey, going through some stuff here. Like, how did you get through it? Did you guys ever really have that type of conversation?
So it wasn't like... our injuries. I'm like, hey, how did you get through this injury? I'm like, hey, how did you get through the recruiting process? How did you call coaches to say no? And she's actually the person who gave me the idea to call the coaches and tell them no. And, but yeah, she's been a huge part in that.
Going back to the recruiting process, was it fun, stressful, all the above? Did you want to get it over with or did you kind of, enjoy playing it out? How was that?
So at first, so before you go to any showcases, before you go to the showcase, you email them out. And the moment you get that first email, like, your heart is pounding. You're super excited. They're like, sure, I'll come watch you play. And then that's where it starts to get a little nerve-wracking. You're like, okay, some college coaches are going to watch me play. But when you go to play, you can't think of that. You can't think college coaches are going to watch. You just have to play your game. And then if they like the way you play, they like the way you play. So, and then it does get stressful towards the end when you have to narrow down colleges, FAFSA, and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's stressful. I think I've seen a lot. I ask all that because I've seen a lot of athletes in our area get overwhelmed by the process and almost give up. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I think I'd just rather not play because mm-hmm. I don't understand the paperwork. Maybe they don't have the family support that someone else has, and they kind of just almost fade away or give up on it. And I hope that if anyone hears this and they need help, like, there are so many people at your school, your coach, a community member, you know, there's somebody out there. Like, if someone reached out to you or me, I know mm-hmm. that we would try to point them in the right direction. And so I just always ask, like, was it, you know, a tough process? And when you got it down to the final two, how long did you wait on that?
2 or 3 weeks.
2-3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Were you really kind of flip-flopping back and forth? Like, one day
yes,
it was Houghton?
Sure.
And
for sure. But actually, Hood was number one on my list for the longest time. And it wasn't until the coach said, I know what type of person you are. That's when Houghton it flipped for me.
So where is Hood? I'm not familiar with them.
Frederick, Maryland.
Was the distance from home also a factor?
No.
So you were like, yeah, I'll go.
And that, yeah, that it can depend on the person. Some people want to be closer to home. And so the biggest part is that your coach is going to ask you, do you want to play soccer in college? And that's the question you have to answer. Put aside the recruiting process, everything. Do you want to play in college, yes or no? And that's what you have to go based off of.
I like it. That's a lot of really, really good advice. So, you know, as we wrap up here, is there anything I missed? Anything, you know, you've wanted to add or any advice or anything to throw out there?
Not really. I mean, my girlfriend's also going to Houghton too.
Oh.
But she decided after I decided, so.
That's cool. That's, mm-hmm. it's going to be nice to have that little, you know, when you go and you're in a new situation, I think having that little slice of home is.
Yep. And we're also going to London together too, so.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You got it all planned out. I love mm-hmm. that. So we always ask all our podcast guests favorite local place to eat. So mm-hmm. what's your go-to spot?
I like the Okinawa here in Sydney.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's really good.
That place is really good. Sushi place down on the corner. We mm-hmm. just had AK in here not too long ago.
Yeah.
And she said that's one of her spots too. Mm-hmm. So good, really good choice. I didn't know what to think. When that place went in there, I thought, I'll give it a try. But, you know, I don't know, Sydney, sushi.
So I think what really started it was like the popularity of boba tea on the rise. If
yeah.
you know what boba tea is, for those of you that don't, it's like tea with tapioca, milk tea with tapioca. And it's all over TikTok or whatever you use. And people are like, okay, I want to do that. So I think it was really smart of them to come in. And I'm assuming their main idea was sushi, but they see that this boba tea is really popular and it's a... I'm actually not sure what kind of cuisine it is, but
yeah.
they're like, okay, let's add that to the menu. And I think that's what has kept people coming as well.
I've never tried it. I'm scared, but I see people walking up and down Main Street all the time with it. So
yeah.
have you tried it?
Yes.
Is
Every
it good?
Time I go there.
Really?
Yes. It's very good.
Man, I might have to,
but you
have to give it a try.
You kind of have to like it. It's kind of like sushi.
Yeah.
You kind of have to like it.
Right. I only struggle with that because, like, I'm a very plain Jane drink guy. Like, mm-hmm. if we go to Starbucks or something and people order, like, I get intimidated by, like, I'm going to have this with this and this and a mm-hmm. shot of this. And I'm like, whoa. Like, mm-hmm. So, hey, sometimes I'm just going to have to step up and give it a try. But, you know, I really appreciate you sharing your story. We hope that you continue to get stronger and faster and get back on the soccer pitch. And we'll have to do this again once you've settled mm-hmm. in. Soccer-wise, you can tell us what your journey's been like, and You got to be so excited to get out there.
Definitely.
Well, I might have to come. I usually go to a couple graduations. I might have to come hear this speech in a few months. So, but Elijah, thanks again, man.
Yeah, thank you.
So that'll wrap up episode 215 today here on the podcast. Check back in the archives. We have had several Afton guests. The first Afton guest I had was of course, Coach Boss, Cindy Bosselman. I would love to get her back here again, just full of stories and Afton history. So check back in the archives, and we'll see you again soon on the Nate Lull Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.